Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Henry Innes. He's the co-founder and CEO of Chainparency. Henry, how you doing?
Good, Kevin. Doing great. It's December. We're getting ready to roll into holidays. So yeah, all is well.
There you go. And we're reaching you from Houston, I believe. So we're joking, temperature fluctuations, time of year, everybody's getting sick. And you and I, we just spent some time together in Australia, Melbourne, and in New Zealand in Rotorua for the Forest Tech 2024 event. How did that event go for you?
Yeah, it was great. I would say it's really good on multiple levels. I actually had never been to New Zealand. Always had heard amazing things. So just to not only be out there, but just to get to Rotorua and see, you know, sort of the local beauty and the geothermal activities in the forest. And obviously with the event was great as well, and to meet folks like yourself. So yeah, I thought it was great. And then to cap it all off in Melbourne, this very good trip. So
awesome. Good stuff. So for our listeners, our audience, the reason, so this is fresh, like Henry and I literally just saw each other last week type of thing, did the long haul flight back to our respective homes. But the reason I reached out to Henry right away was I thought what he presented at Forest Tech 2024 was really germane to the digital forest community. Really cool stuff. So hopefully you'll agree after listening to this pod that there's some amazing things happening at Chainparency. So maybe before we jump into what Chainparency is, I always like to start off with the person I'm talking to, their journey. So looking at LinkedIn, I see, you know, Penn State, I believe, finance undergrad, then Duke University, MBA, and then there is some venture stuff, and then somehow you ended up where you are now. So maybe walk us through that journey of what you studied and that path. I believe there's a venture component. You've been on the other side of being the person with capital and allocating that. But maybe give us a journey through the start of your career and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. It really is, as I look back on it too, it's a long, circuitous journey. Unexpected to get to where I am today, but yeah, I started out my career in management consulting. So at the time, I guess it was the Big Four, it's just, you know, focusing on solutions for Fortune 500 companies. From there, I moved over to corporate finance side, doing mostly middle market, sell side, M&A. And then moved into the venture side, really doing really early stage seed to Series A type venture investing. And one of the great parts there was that, you know, I got to see all the new technology and innovations. And one of those particular areas was blockchain technology. And when that really clicked for me to see what blockchain was all about and how transformative it was going to be, I really kind of dove all in as an entrepreneur. Wore a lot of different hats, different projects. Eventually that led to me meeting my co-founder right now, Travis. We worked together previously in another blockchain organization, and then eventually we founded Chainparency. So, you know, I would say if I look back on all of it, it's some form of a different level of problem solving, I think, from different areas. And from an enterprise perspective, certainly thinking about how we can use technology to drive innovation and really for impact. And so what we're doing today in Chainparency, it's really all about that, is leveraging technology for impact. And this is particularly in supply chains.
Very cool. And so before we dive into the Chainparency side, I did see on your LinkedIn profile the early side of your blockchain work, but it was on the genomic side. So I was wondering if you can maybe share with us what the thought was at that time. And then eventually I'm thinking we can connect the dots to what you're doing now with Chainparency, because I suspect there's been a lot of lessons learned or things on that space and carrying that forward. But genomics and blockchain, like, what's up with that?
Yeah, so thematically, and one of the things that you'll probably hear me say this quite a bit, but blockchain really is powerful for in terms of empowering people and empowerment, I would say particularly around owning your data. So With this technology, it really gives people the ability to, manage their data, own their data, to enable access to their data. I would say traditional models that we've all experienced in various different, particularly, I would say on the social media side, we've freely give up our data quite a bit. And that really is the monetization model for a lot of these different businesses. And when you think about something so sensitive like your genomic data, that's pretty important. And I won't go into details and call out names, but there certainly have been plenty of business models in recent years where you freely give up your genomic data, which goes into clinical trials and things like that, clinical research. And there's no monetization piece for you, and there's certainly a privacy concern going forward. So technologies like blockchain help to tackle issues like that, to really control the data and really to allocate that to the people that you want to share the data with. And if you do that, maybe there is the monetization piece that goes with it too. So and this is looking forward, very applicable to how we look at challenges today in our supply chains. And we'll get to that, I think, once we drill down on chainparency. But I do think that's one of those use cases with blockchain is you've got a digital ID component, you've got the ability to sort of control and harness your data, and all of that's sort of real-time auditable on a ledger. So
Yeah, for sure. And that's probably a good segue, because I in terms of we probably need to back up, and just as you did in your presentations that I saw, give our listeners, and you've probably done it a million or a bajillion times, an intro on what blockchain is, because right now there's probably one of those digital foresters with their burrito to the moon on Bitcoin passing 100K and thinking, hey, how timely, like Henry's going to talk to us about Bitcoin. But that's not what this is about, is it, when we think about blockchain? So maybe give us the intro 101 to what a blockchain is and why people should be excited and care about it going into the future.
yeah, I and you pointed out exactly. I always like to say, start out with saying what blockchain is not. And I think people have heard so much about cryptocurrencies or NFTs, and those are all great, and they're different applications, but it doesn't represent the underlying technology, the underlying network, which is blockchain. And so I always like to just describe blockchain as a sort of a new type of digital record keeping system. We're all comfortable with this idea of a ledger, spreadsheets, but yeah, it's a new kind of digital record keeping system. But this digital notebook, if you will, has some very unique attributes. One, it's a very secure form of recording that data. When events are recorded on this digital notebook, they are timestamped, real-time recorded, and really important, irreversibly recorded onto this ledger. So once an event is on the blockchain, it can't be reversed. It can't be edited, so it's one of those things from a data preservation perspective, is very compelling, especially when you talk about supply chains, because all of that is really chain of custody type events. And so when you're making a claim or you're making any sort of trying to validate activities that happen, transactions, you want to go back to that raw underlying data and have the confidence to know that it hasn't been altered, hasn't been changed. And the reality is, especially if you're talking about our vast supply chains, things happen, right? Things happen, and sometimes there are bad actors out there, and it undermines the work that you're trying to do, and certainly the authenticity and the validity of the claims that you're making around your product. So that's kind of like how I like to view blockchain. It's kind of that single source of truth among all the different stakeholders, and having that confidence to know that the transactions, the events, the data that's being captured is something of high integrity, that you can rely upon.
So thinking of that with the data, when we talk about that, is it really the attributes of the data? I'm just thinking of our digital forester. So maybe someone goes out and they cruise a plot and they've got a tally sheet with the trees and their measurements. And maybe they're supporting some type of a carbon type of inventory, but they also take a photo. Is it the actual physical data that goes onto the blockchain, or is it more of a summary to say, hey, I've got these fields, and then we're creating a hash signature for that data set? But maybe walk us through, like, when you say data, what is it really going on in the ledger? Is it the actual data that then can be pulled back from the ledger and reconstituted to its original source, or is it more of something else that uniquely fingerprints that particular data set?
Yeah, that's a really important question because I think there's always this notion that, oh, you've got all this voluminous amount of information and data that's sitting on this ledger, right? And that's really not the case. Data comes in all sorts of different formats, as we know, and some of that could be manually inputted, some of that's a passive. But however you ingest that data, the way the technology works, it will take sort of a unique snapshot of this voluminous amounts of data, put that into sort of a fixed limited format. And that format, that unique signature, is what lives on the ledger with a timestamp. So as long as you've always got that raw underlying data and that it has not changed, it will always result in that same unique signature on the blockchain. Now, the moment you change that raw underlying data, you'll have a new signature. So that's really how it becomes obvious that something's been tampered with or some new event has happened with that data. From an audit perspective, but it's not like taking, entire amounts of text and throwing that all on there. It really is sort of a unique fixed limited type signature that lives on the blockchain.
Right. So given that, if someone was to make a claim, if the person had that source raw data, they can say, hey, look, this source data matches that unique signature that's actually on the ledger. And thus I'm kosher or legit. Cool. That makes sense. And so one thing I remember when we were chatting in person, I was like before we dive into transparency in the deep, I was kind of joking, like who's using this stuff? And you're like, both Asian people, you're like, well, it's like, and you lived in Singapore, if I remember correctly, for a while. You're like, Kev, it's like, some folks really like their seafood and pay a lot of money for lobster. And you're explaining for some people, they actually want like something as simple or something as simple as seafood. You're explaining to me, yeah, they actually might want to check where this lobster came from and all that lineage, if that's the right word. And I believe you initially did a lot of that, or you still do a lot of that work. But maybe walk us through another maybe similar example that our listeners can go, oh, okay, I can associate what the power of this ledger in a different use case maybe.
Yeah. I think we are have come to a point, especially I would say right now, is if you're a consumer, retailer, buyer, I mean, not only are you paying for something, you really care about what it is you're purchasing, right? And so, and if you extrapolate this over in looking at supply chains and how are things ethically sourced, are they responsibly harvested? These are all not just sort of curiosities. People almost demand this now. And certainly at the corporate level, it's very important. But to the example on seafood, yeah, I think there was a statistic here in the US that 60%, potentially more, of seafood products here in the US are either mislabeled or fraudulent, in terms of how it's claimed, in terms of that seafood protein. So that's unfortunately, when you're talking about food, there's a lot of adulterated food in our supply chains. So I think people care a lot, not only for health purposes, but if you're paying for something with a premium, for example, you might really want to validate that. And I think in this day and age, when we're talking about organic or, again, ethically sourced, these are all things that are people say, but is it, how do you know? Right. And so technology can help address this problem. And the use case you pointed out, we've had some done some work in the seafood supply chain, particularly around an example I'll give you is lobsters. And lobsters are great because we always like to bring this example up. It's pretty easy to track. The lobster doesn't undergo any transformation. It's fresh, right? So it literally is from the point of catch, all the way transported directly to the final point of origin for consumption. And the way we've done it, working through with our customers, is that you could literally put a zip tie right on the lobster claw, or they and then that lobster can go into a cooler. And all of these different assets along the way are uniquely tagged and can be recorded on the blockchain for that chain of custody event. And that particular example, one of our customers, it ends up in Shanghai in the Waldorf Astoria. That was their signature dish. And when customers ordered this lobster, they would serve it with the QR code still attached to its claw, and they could scan the QR code. And you would see the entire, not only the journey of where that seafood came from, but you would learn information about the community, the people, the fishermen, really bring that unique connection between the food you're enjoying and where it came from. And I think that's so important, I think, in this day and age, when we want closer connection with our harvesters and producers and where things come from. And again, when we start talking about forests, forests are so special and sacred across the plants. People want that connection, right? And so again, if you're paying for something of premium like that, you might want to know the freshness, the integrity, the provenance, and then all the way down to the story of who helped harvest that, catch that seafood, right? So that gives you an example. You know, again, lobsters are unique in that it's a unit level item that doesn't undergo transformation, say for example like tuna. But that's it's a fun one to show because it's very visual. So
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I could definitely kind of definitely see it in the head, in the brain there. So maybe that's a good segue to kind of pull us into the digital forester and forestry, forest chain parency. So as someone who's played in the M&A space and the venture, I'm dying to know what's chain parency's 30-second pitch.
yeah, so well, first off, Chain Parency, we're a supply chain software and data solutions company, and we create very unique turnkey software applications and tools that empower any organization or enterprise, regardless of size, budget, or even technical proficiency, to engage in end-to-end digital collection, digital traceability at scale. So with our solution, a mobile device, that's all that is needed to get started with that digital traceability at scale solution.
Awesome. Awesome. See, great pitch. Everyone listening to that can actually understand that and very cool. So thinking of the forestry side, I know, so I'm a bit, not biased, but I'm in a position 'cause I've seen your presentations twice in New Zealand, Australia. So I get to kind of guide. I kind of know a little bit of, some of the answers to my questions, but, why don't you walk us through how you got into for, well, with transparency, I was about to think about the technology, and getting my head ahead of myself, but thinking of forestry, like what brought you in? Because I know talking with you, like we've been doing stuff elsewhere, like and very successfully, and like seven figure type of projects going on, and then when we come to forestry, we've got an industry that guaranteed there's some people listening to this still scratching the head trying to make some connections. There are others that are going forward, but you're actually doing real work with forestry organizations again at scale. So maybe describe what you're doing today, and then we'll go to where you actually want to go in the future.
You know, when we started this business, very important part for us was to make sure that this solution, especially coming from the blockchain world, which is it's very it's, you know, I always like to describe it as sort of a bad UI UX. It's hard to understand. It's hard to interface with blockchain. And even today, if you get into the crypto stuff, these digital wallets and all these kind of things, it's hard to understand. So, you know, Travis and I, we really wanted to make sure that this solution was really intuitive so that anybody in the supply chain could use it. So that's why we started out with this notion that it's just like signing up for a Zoom account. If you have a mobile device and you have our application, you could be out doing digital traceability in the this afternoon powered by blockchain technology. So that really was how we started this. Our solution is really has been industry agnostic. So we never started this saying, hey, we got to dive into forestry. That wasn't how it happened. We just said, hey, look, we want this to be really easy to use. Easy to use, very flexible and configurable type system. It just happened that one of our first customers happened to be in the industrial pellets world. So pellets, meaning a renewable bioenergy source that's a coal alternative. So that was really, you know, I think right at the beginning of our journey was we were all of a sudden involved in pellets. And to us, it made a lot of sense because the claim is there, especially if this is a coal alternative, that fiber, that underlying fiber that's going to these pellets have to be sustainably sourced. And that's a big part of it. So if you're a buyer downstream and you're saying you've got a sort of an environmentally friendly coal alternative, you want to make sure that fiber has been sustainably sourced, responsibly sourced. So these are the powerful claims that are important claims that are being made. And that's where our solution would come in, is to help authenticate where the origination came from down to the track level. So when we do that, we're looking at, you know, a sort of a geofenced polygon or harvest track. And then once you start harvesting that, the wood going into truckloads, you're then also recording, you know, timestamps, latitude, longitude coordinates, GPS events, and all of that being real time and irreversibly recorded on our ledger for 24/7 audit, right? So that if you take that model, it works for any industry, but it just so happened that, you know, among our first customers was in that industrial pellets world. So we learned a lot. You know, we learned a lot from that experience and all the different types of data that was needed. And so we've just continued to grow and iterate since that time into, of course, lots of different other areas within the forestry wood products value chain.
Yeah, very interesting. So thinking of that, if I dig in it a little bit more, you've got your track, you got some volume that's starting to be harvested, it gets loaded. Back to my first question, we're not tracking individual logs or anything like that, as opposed to we've got a load and that load is uniquely identified, and then we're going to track it through the chain parency technology from start to end. But maybe could you describe what some of those key stages are in that supply chain in that example?
And I would clarify too is that depending on the type of wood, the species, and the particular use case, you might be tracking it at the wood level, at the
Okay.
unit level. Okay, so we have customers where they literally will tag a QR code or a signature on each, you know, log. That's and then those logs get loaded onto a truck. In that scenario, you've got essentially then multiple items that are being tracked. The truckload is being tracked, and then you've got these what we call child loads that are being nested into a larger parent load. But typically, if it's sort of a lower value, if you're talking about residuals and you're talking about some of these things, these are typically tracked by truckload. In this example, if you're getting, say, low value wood that's being dumped in the back of a truck, you again will have sort of a geofence polygon. The system knows you're in that polygon or not. And once that truckload backs in, depending on the customer, but if there's a loader there, that loader will help to orchestrate the putting that fiber into the back of the truck. The trucker will basically have a mobile phone. And we typically recommend the mobile device be pretty locked down in terms of, you know, you don't want a whole bunch of apps on there. You don't want to be taking calls and stuff like that for a whole host of reasons. But typically, a lot of our customers will have devices allocated specifically to the hauler to use just for the track and trace operation. And so, once the truckload is full, the hauler will basically just press a button, you know, start tracking. There's only a few different buttons that can be pressed, basically. So it's a very limited functionality. But once that happens, immediately there's a few things that's going to happen in the system. There's a unique ID that represents every load. In this case, it's a truckload. But there's other metadata you can record too. For example, if you wanted information around the species of the fiber, you could, if you wanted to, you know, put tonnage, you wanted to put any other, maybe there's some biodiversity issues that you want to note. You could put in information on the modality of the truck. Anything that's important, you can input that into the system as part of the data collection process. But once that hauler presses that button, it starts to record, you know, the timestamps, the lat launch coordinates, and as they start driving, it's just routinely systematically collecting that data all the way to the final part where they hit stop and deliver. So once that happens, what you see on a fairly granular journey map is the entire journey, very precise actually. In the system, you can audit all those raw coordinates again back to the blockchain. And so typically something like this will be from track to mill. Once you get to the mill into the scale house, for our customers, we've also integrated with different weigh scales and sort of inventory accounting systems through API connections. And that's how you take that track and trace data, you link it to a unique load ID, and that load ID then gets linked into different ID systems within existing accounting and inventory systems. So that data gets sort of linked all the way through. And when the time comes for an audit, you have all of that granular data to back up your particular products.
All right. So based on what you described, Henry, it really, I know you say it's agnostic and what, but you really don't care about what type of data. It's up to the customer to say these are the inputs that are important to us, and your technology be like, great. It's like we'll codify it and put it on the blockchain in some form. Now, knowing our digital foresters, I already know some of you are out there thinking, oh, Henry, this is great, but it's forestry and we work often in GPS denied environments or cellular denied environments or where there's no signal. So great what you're talking about it, but it's not going to work. So how do you handle those scenarios, which can occur, can be quite common in some areas, but I also suspect there is an elegant solution for that.
Yeah, so for our system, you need to at least have a GPS connection. So you do need to have a GPS connection, and then typically it's passively collecting that data, and then once you get back into range, it'll sort of populate it into the system. But you do need to have a GPS connection. Some of our customers will use like some signal boosters. There's a different a variety of things you can do to help, get that better signal. I know there's a lot of talk about experimenting with Starlink as well. So there's avenues where people are starting to, if it's really, really tough. The other part too is we get into some areas where the GPS signals, the triangulation gets confusing, and we found it might be because it's certain, for example, like a military or government installation or something is nearby, which causes the signaling to be challenging. But what we find is important here with this system is because it's all real-time data, you get a lot of context, right? So even if you're in an area where it's kind of fuzzy, if you know the timestamps are, 5, 6, 7 minutes, it's unlikely that there was a different routing that took place. You can essentially see from context what likely happened. They drove through an area, and then they popped out on the other end, and then the signals are picked up again. So that's why we always say it's really about giving you that digital context of contextual awareness of what's happening in your supply chain. If hauler is driving and they stop, the administrator or anybody can quickly note that there was a flat tire, for example. So it's giving you that context of what's happening because all of it's in real time. And if you start to geofence certain areas too, the system will know whether you've entered a geofenced area or not. So there's a lot of things in the back end that can start to give you insights and in awareness as well. But for the system, you definitely do need a GPS connectivity system. If you're using other sensors, of course, that's helpful too. It'll just integrate with the sensors as well. So the more opportunities to ingest data, the more context you'll have. And again, that goes back to that digital mosaic of understanding what's really true and what's really happening in your supply chain.
Right. So it really sounds like this could be run out of the box, but also if there's unique things that you can also do a bespoke type of setup for a customer based on their needs. Very cool. And of course, I'm assuming smartphones works on any smartphone, Android, iOS, very cool. Just asking some of the low level questions for some of our listeners who I know are thinking about those type of things. So thinking about adoption in forestry now, would you say you've killed it, you won it all, or would you say we're just scratching the surface and there's lots of other opportunities within forestry alone? What are your thoughts or views on the market?
And I guess I'll get a little philosophical with here is that, it's still early, I would say, in terms of technology, especially blockchain adoption. It's still early, but we are at a point now where you're past that tipping point and everyone's sort of talking about it now, and they're looking strategically to implement it. But where I get a little philosophical is that technology is only one part of the equation. Yeah, very important, and we always talk about this, is that there needs to be alignment for compliance to use the tools. So meaning that if I don't have any incentives to do this and to use it, it doesn't matter how good the technology is, I'm just not going to use it. So we always look at it from the lens of, is there economic alignment? Can we make your life easier? Do we make drive efficiencies? There needs to be something to compel people to do these things. And I would say this is especially true in this day and age. Our harvesters, our producers, our haulers, there's more pressure and more demands than ever to do certain things as we start demanding or requiring more around, say, climate smart practices and carbon. And these things are so important, but again, it requires compliance and there needs to be alignment. And we always like to say everyone needs a seat at the table. So we always look at it from, yes, here's the technology, here it's accessible, but hey, tell us how we can remove some friction points for you. Maybe if we can make your life easier, or if there is economic alignment, perhaps you're getting paid more to do certain things, that will help with the compliance. And so I think where we're at is this stage where how can we reimagine supply chains to enable more alignment so that everyone sees the benefit of all the work that needs to get done. So that's where I see, technology. It's good, from an industrialization standpoint, it's helped us to do more. And now we're getting into AI. They're helping us to think better and faster. But There are some fundamental things that I think from a social people perspective, that how we engage everyone and how they get incentivized to do things. I think that's a really important part of the equation.
Yeah, and thanks for sharing that. And I think it's worthwhile to also highlight, or maybe I'll ask you to I know you presented it, so I assume it's public information, but some of the forestry organizations that you're working with, because right now some folks may be listening going like, oh, this is early, this is all hypothetical, but based on what I saw from your presentations and the organizations, like there's some players here that you've been working with that are significant that our audience would actually recognize. So maybe you can highlight some of those
Sure.
forestry players. Yeah.
Yeah, we're really fortunate and proud to be able to partner, for example, with the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities. That's North America's largest public charity focused on working forests and forest-reliant communities. So the endowment has so many different touch points across the forestry value chain. They're an amazing partner. We've been fortunate because they actually started something a few years back called the Forest Trust Network. And that is essentially a growing consortium of enterprises that are utilizing blockchain technology in throughout forestry supply chains, all different kinds of products and use cases. And in that Forest Trust Network, we proudly serve on that leadership council, and our technology is essentially the infrastructure that's powering that solution and powering the network. So by virtue of that, yeah, we've been involved. I mentioned pellets already, but we're also involved in hardwoods, paper and pulp, biochar. Increasingly, we've been involved in mass timber, which I'm very excited about mass timber. I think there's such great potential there, just to reimagine construction and development projects. But yeah, some of the companies that we've been working with, like Invivo on the pellet side, we're working with Domtar on paper and pulp, Thomas Appalachian, which is a multi-generational family focused on hardwoods, in Tennessee. We've also got Wakefield Biochar, which is a really big key biochar player in the United States. But just to give you an example, some of these, we've got some others that we're working with too, but we really kind of have a touch point across a lot of the different forestry value chain. And thematically and sort of from a methodology standpoint, how we use the tool is very similar across board. We've got the only difference is maybe we've got a sort of a dynamic form builder, so you might just be collecting different data across the supply chain, but in terms of the methodology, it's very similar how we apply that from forestry to seafood.
Right. And so when you mentioned you're really excited about mass timber, can you expand on that and why you're excited about mass timber in the context of chain parency?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last statistic I saw was that 1% of construction projects in North America are using engineered wood components, right? So there's a tremendous potential, and when you look at traditional concrete steel-based construction projects, obviously there's a massive carbon footprint there, and so this idea where you can create new structures that are primarily timber, you're not only sequestering carbon permanently in these buildings, but there's been a lot of added benefits associated from insulation standpoint, potentially sort of a fire resistant type solution. It's been said that a lot of these buildings can be developed faster because they're kind of like Lego pieces that you just put together pretty quickly. So there's a lot of benefits from efficiencies to carbon, and also just and for some of the listeners here, if they've ever been in a primarily mass timber type building, it's beautiful, aesthetically, and you walk in there, you can almost feel it, right? So there's a lot of benefits, I think, in terms of where this can all lead to, and there's just been an explosion with the number of projects, and for the next 20, 30 years, it's really going to be exponential growth in the space. For us on the technology side, I would say it's really important on a variety of reasons that all of this activity in this value chain, it needs to be recorded. Especially because one of the big claims around it, of course, is the sort of the net environment benefits of using mass timber relative to traditional construction approaches. That means you really got to measure a lot of that from a life cycle assessment, whole building life cycle assessment from the point of harvest and all the way as this wood is being turned into these components eventually to be put together in these building sites. So it needs to be measured. It needs to be measured. There needs to be calculations to do these LCAs. And then depending on how you the claims that are around the building that you're producing, one project that we're working on right now, you might need to track that all the way to the tract itself. So depending on the claims you're making for the wood specifically going into the building, that might have to be really precise in terms of where you're getting that wood from, how you track and trace it. And even to, and I touched on this during some of these presentations, just reimagining how the supply chain works, requiring a bit more segregation, a bit more specialty in terms of how the wood is being processed and then track and traced. So a lot of this is sort of reimagining what these supply chains might look like depending on the downstream needs.
Yeah, very cool, very cool. And so you hinted at some of the chain parency technology, but for again, I'm in the position where I've seen your presentation, so I get to I know some of the answers. But what's the specific tech? You mentioned a bit of that form building side, and there's other applications, but I believe there's a GoTrace type of brand that pulls it together. So maybe for our listeners, can you maybe describe like what the ecosystem of chain parency applications are, or if they're interested in engaging with you, what can they expect in terms of, oh, that smartphone app, is that the only thing, or are there other pieces?
Our flagship product, as you mentioned, is called GoTrace. So this is the GoTrace platform, and it's, you know, we like to describe it as really turnkey and configurable platform. Really good for data and task management. So customers are using GoTrace right now to basically validate claims, to streamline and optimize their workflows, and just to drive efficiencies, to comply with regulations, and really to advance a lot of these kind of climate smart practices and sustainability work. So these are a lot of the key areas of why you use the platform. But the platform itself, it's sort of mobile first type solution. So, you know, as I mentioned, as long as you've got a mobile device, Android or iOS, you can really start using it. Obviously, for more complex supply chains, the desktop element is really important. That gives you a different experience to do more functionalities as an administrator. And so, typically, when you're out in the field, the mobile app is the best element for that because it's very defined solutions on that, and you've got a limited sort of real estate on that phone anyway. On the desktop version, you obviously can do a lot more, and you can do a lot of that task management assigning and the collaborations that are needed to drive these workflows. So it really is that kind of an experience. But that platform alone, I would say there's four primary sort of applications. One is sort of what we call the user app. Out of the box, there are 10 different profiles, if you will, that comes in GoTrace. These are the most common ones. So you can imagine like a loader, a receiver, a transporter, administrator, field inspector, supplier, these kind of things. All you simply have to do, the administrator would just put the individual's email address down. They would send that, hit the button. The individual would then receive an email invite and then have the ability to download a version of the app based on their role and privileges. So it's a very defined experience there. Those are sort of the 10 unique roles, but it's very easy for us to add additional profiles and roles and privileges. It just depends on the customer's needs. But out of the box, when you start that subscription, you get these 10 different profiles. The next part is what I would call sort of the location app. We have multiple ways to create and define polygons in your supply chain. So especially in forestry, this is super important, especially I would say in this environment where there's concern about complying with the EUDR and some of these other things, to be able to define those polygons. Right now, you can input lat long coordinates in there and define a radius of up to 50 miles on in our platform. You can manually draw polygons. You can upload a shape file. You can, in the United States specifically, if you're in certain an area real time, you can be able to, with that lat long coordinate, then to automatically pull parcel data and polygon data into the system. We also have ways to do bulk uploads too, depending on what the customer needs are. So it's really flexible on how you define these locations, and all of them will be to six decimals, which is important for compliance purposes. The other part is we have a dynamic form builder, so really easy to create all kinds of different kinds of digital forms that you would essentially link to the locations. So when you send that form out, whoever the responsibility is for the, for example, if you're a field inspector, you would have a form with certain requirements on there, and it's very easy to be able to then manually or drop downs or however you need to do. It's very simple to create these forms to collect the data that's needed within those supply chains. And then last, I would say, is our load element, the load app. And this is where you essentially create digital twins to represent the unique physical assets, for example, like a truckload. The load app then enables that real-time track and trace of those physical assets throughout the supply chain. So onboard users, create locations, create data collection forms, and then define the unique assets that need to be tracked and traced throughout your supply chain. So all of that can be done on the platform right now. And we also are able to integrate with any kind of external third-party hardware software system. As I mentioned, Wayscales, GPS trackers, inventory accounting systems, drones, it doesn't matter. We just look at those as different avenues and ways to ingest the data into the platform.
Yeah, so while the topic sounds really broad and nebulous, based on what you described, it also sounds like to get up and running can be pretty straightforward and relatively simple. Yeah. Now you mentioned the European Deforestation Regulation or EUDR. I'm going to assume that you've mentioned it, and I'm assuming that's a big driver of importance for chain parency because it seems like it's a natural, logical fit. Is that a fair statement? And are you seeing that adoption go exponentially in general, or with a delay in EUDR by a year, are you seeing folks just kind of pausing? But what's your read on the landscape of forestry companies kind of getting on board and behind EUDR?
Yeah, I would say generally, really strong tailwinds is compliance in general. We've been tracking all the different regulations coming out from around the world. There are so many requirements right now for digital records, forwards, backwards traceability, especially if you're talking around claims where from sustainability, carbon, circularity, all these kind of things. There's a lot of regulation that's emerging, and you're gonna in one way or another, you're going to have these kind of records in place from and due diligence and have these information requirements. So EUDR specifically, though, from when we're talking about forestry, for sure, that has been an area of a lot of concern. And I think we've all seen this. There was a lot of everyone was sort of patiently waiting to see how this was going to unfold, timeline wise, and politics and all this kind of stuff. But where we've seen significant adoption around this is, I would say, the early adopters, those first movers who realize they want to get ahead of it. They want to get ahead of it and say, you know what? These kind of digital records and requirements and diligence, this isn't going away. And if we get ahead of it now, we are going to be strategically in a better position and more competitive relative to our peers who are, sort of holding out and being more resistant and kind of wait to see. So yeah, I would say it's these first movers. We like to call them sort of the champions of transparency. They're willing to do this now. The other part, though, is I would say anecdotally, we've also heard a lot of you've got traders and operators in Europe who basically they're also coming to that conclusion too. You know what? Even though there has been a delay of 12 months, we're going to go ahead and begin to operate in that manner because it's going to be here anyway. And we believe in it and we want to get started. So that obviously is trickling down to suppliers saying, okay, we got to be in a position to start providing this information or else it's going to jeopardize our business. So, but we're definitely seeing it irrespective of the delays. It's happening and everyone's talking about it in one way or another.
Right. Makes sense. Now, I know some folks probably listening to this will, again, what you're doing with the blockchain is not Bitcoin. It's not Doge. It's not Shibu, not whatever altcoin, whatever it is. But naturally, there's somebody who's going to be listening going, yeah, but Henry, I heard if you're doing Bitcoin mining, it takes like the full power energy of like this entire country or these five different countries, and it's not really environmentally sustainable or friendly for that matter. With your blockchain technology, does that fall into that category of you need a of five countries worth of power, or is it something different?
Yeah, Kevin, this is a really important question. So, first to everyone who's tuning in, there's many kinds of blockchains out there. And depending on what your use case is, will dictate sort of what blockchain you need. But the reality is for most enterprise type level solution, you're going to need something that's highly scalable, affordable, and particularly in this environment, it needs to be environmentally friendly, right? So we developed our own protocol that the way it's set up and the way that it processes transactions on our blockchain, it's highly scalable. We average less than a penny per transaction, and we have a very, very low sort of energy consumption. We average roughly about the amount of power for powering four homes in the United States. So it's a very environmentally friendly, highly scalable, and frictionless almost in terms of cost. And that's obviously really important when you're talking about the solutions that we're involved in, particularly in forestry and agriculture, for example, where you're going to have an environmentally positive solution, especially if you're doing work around sustainability, right? So that's something we always like to emphasize with our GoTrade solution. You don't have to worry about that. In fact, you're not paying extra for anything else. It's all part of your subscription. You get the platform and the tools, and then you're also still getting the benefit of a highly scalable, enterprise-grade, environmentally friendly blockchain.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. So kind of walking the talk at the same time. There's no hidden power hog there. And then I do remember, like with a lot of these blockchains, they're for that scalability, they're often distributed. And I believe even when we were in Melbourne, you said, hey, there's a university over there that's actually doing some of our blockchain processing. What can you tell us about that footprint? When you say scalability, what does that really
Sure.
mean?
Yeah. So, example, for example, like Bitcoin Network, for example, they're one of the most, you're talking about 12, 13,000, nodes, blockchain nodes that are processing these transactions. So the more distributed and decentralized, it's great, because it's really high security. But then at that point, it also becomes really poor in terms of scalability because you've got just, and it's the way that Bitcoin was designed specifically for that purpose. For us and the protocol that we're using, it's called the GoChain network. We have a maximum of 50 nodes that are processing the transactions in our blockchain. But from a governance and sort of security perspective, we're working with we call our it's called a consensus framework. Basically, how we process these transactions is something called proof of reputation. And what that really means is that we're working with highly reputable entities like nonprofits, universities, publicly traded companies, these kind of entities that believe in what we're doing, they believe in blockchain, a sustainable blockchain, but also they wouldn't do anything, silly on the network because it would unnecessarily damage the reputation, So the university you mentioned in Melbourne, we're proud to have RMIT, which is the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. They're one of the node signers in our blockchain, so they help process these transactions. They're not going to collude with the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund, which is also one of our node signers, right? So this is the idea, is that they believe in innovation and technology, but they need it to be an environmentally friendly solution, and that's why they're part of the GoChain ecosystem. But that's how we approach it, to have that right balance of decentralization and distribution to enable that scalability, at the same time be environmentally friendly and affordable.
Right, interesting. So I've never heard of that proof of reputation. I've heard of the proof of work, the proof of stake. And then so now there's a third one there. So very, very cool. I did not realize that. So we talked a little bit of price. I'm wondering for some of our listeners, foresters are always cost efficient. And I grin when I say that every time I say that on the podcast. And I know others are grinning as well. But is there anything you can share in terms of cost, like for the average size organization? Is this something that they need to like really plan, like a big lift in terms of securing funding, or is there tiers of subscription that you mentioned? I've heard that word subscription. What can you share for our listeners so they get a sense that this is doable? There are people doing it now, and it is something that's viable that can support EUDR, can support other types of even ESG requirements.
Yeah, so it is subscription based. So there's different levels of tiers. I would say at the most basic level, we have a plan where it's super affordable. It's just paying by seat, and you're talking in that tier. You're talking almost like $30 a seat. It's a really affordable type thing.
Wow.
We also have programs where if you are a sort of a lower income type organization. We have special programs. We call it our GAPS program. That program, you can almost essentially be able to use a sort of a slimmed down version of our solution almost at a complimentary basis almost. So it's a really afford there's we view these tools as a way to empower these first miles, operators. Wherever we can do it, we try to. Now, obviously, for more enterprise solutions, that's a much higher price point. You're getting a lot more out of it in terms of not only the technology, there's other support technical services that we're providing on top of it. But I think the big takeaway here is that we've got pricing that's compatible with every stakeholder in the supply chain. And if you're a small outfit, a micro company, we've even have just some fishermen, a few boats. They're able to use it too because there's different pricing tiers that makes it meaningful for them to be able to use such a powerful technology and then hopefully open up new market opportunities for them. So, when we started this, that was the point. We wanted to make sure that whoever you are, wherever you play on this supply chain, there's an entry point for you. And obviously, downstream, bigger players have bigger requirements, more complex needs. Of course, the subscription will sort of flex accordingly.
Right, absolutely. Enterprise is always the call me if you want to learn more, and
Right.
because it all depends. There's all these different circular edge cases and whatnot. So part of the Digital Forester podcast, I often ask folks, like this topic is on one side. I wanted to say, it's heavy, and yet it's not heavy because the way you've described it, people can understand and connect the dots and see the different use cases. But this is still in the category of this is pretty leading edge, advanced technology. Like it's not pervasive through the forestry sector, the industry, at least as I know it. So if I was to ask you, Henry, to look out maybe 5 years, 10 years out, what are those technologies? And again, you're in that unique position because you've played in that M&A space, you played in that venture space. Like you, as you said, you've seen all these great technologies and had that privilege to see startups and doing all these different things. But now that you're in that entrepreneurial role, as CEO, you're always, the visionary, always looking out on further horizons. You mentioned AI. Is that the next thing that's really caught your eye, or is there some other technology that's even further out that you're thinking, man, if these things come together or to fruition or they converge or it's something completely out of left field, would change chain parency for even the better. What are your thoughts on the future technology and which ones are you really keeping an eye on?
Yeah, and so I know in this particular discussion we've had today, Kevin, is that we talk a lot about blockchain, but realistically, it isn't something that we talk a lot about, in terms of how the customers are using it, because the blockchain part is almost seamless. No one's saying, okay, now it's time to use blockchain. They're using the platform and the applications and the tools. And then as part of that benefit, it's all seamlessly happening in the background, right? So blockchain is from a user experience perspective. They're not doing any additional work with that. It's really just happening kind of in the background. And that was really done by design. So blockchain is there. It's just really working the background. So when the audit time comes, you've got this really high integrity data that you can rely upon. But when, looking ahead, and even, Kevin, we were out at, Forestech, there's lots of different tools and mechanisms. All of it really kind of boils down to data. So it's just different ways of ingesting data. If you're talking about LiDAR, if you're talking about drones, sensors. So we're going to have just no end to the amount of data I think that we're going to keep consuming. And then, of course, that's where AI can come in to help give you more quickly some of these insights. So I think from a data consumption perspective, that's just going to be expected that you have the different tools to be able to. And I think a lot of people outside of forestry would be surprised. They think of forestry and they don't maybe realize just how sophisticated the technologies that are emerging. Certainly precision ag people see, but precision silviculture and precision forestry, that's here too. So this boils down to data and efficiencies. I think these are the two components that is only going to continue to increase. Where I'd like to see a lot of the innovation comes down to is actually some unique business models. There's just the tech component that's going to continue to accelerate. We're going to continue to have more data, continue to drive efficiencies. But I'd like to see, ways that we can unlock new opportunities for people within these supply chains as they use these technology tools. And that I think will be really neat. And I think even now it's timely because there's a lot of demands and requirements that are going to require compliance and activities well beyond just using these tools.
Yeah, thanks for that. And so maybe as we look to wind down, the final question I'd pose, and you touched on it, but I was holding it back to maybe use it to kind of maybe connect the dots, or maybe they won't connect, and I'm totally delusional. But as we look to wind down, you touched on that concept of payment. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that and what it really means, because is that a game changer in the sense of different players and actors doing business on the blockchain? And when we think about payment, whether it's in a crypto format, whether it's in fiat, whatever it is, but I suspect there's this really interesting world where you're transacting on the blockchain and you could almost be paid instantly based on how these things, these assets are moving through a supply chain. Is that a fair way of thinking about it? Or do you see it differently? Or do you even see it beyond that in terms of what this can really be? And then we're starting to go into this digital economy world, even beyond supply chain technology. But what are your thoughts on that, maybe as my final question?
No, I'm really glad you brought that up. So when we talk about sort of these new business models, part of that, I would say, is that, and by the way, this technology exists today. It's just a function of time before it's adopted. But with blockchain technology, you're also talking about smart contract solutions. And basically, you're just talking about self-executing computer code, with certain parameters that just like writing any other contract, it's just a digital contract. It will self-execute once certain parameters are met. And so, if we think about that in the context of supply chains, if you do certain activity that you're required to do and you sort of check the boxes, for sure, a smart contract could self-execute payments. And we're actually starting to experiment with that now. We've got a few pilots that we're running with some customers. But the whole idea that if I perform some sustainability or climate smart work, if I do that, then and it's validated, in this case through technology, I can automatically get paid, So imagine setting up a digital escrow, and with that smart contract, I fulfill certain requirements, or if I'm a hauler, once I go across that scale house and I deliver the load, why do I need to wait to get paid? I can get paid now, right? And then when we talk about the incentives and the alignment, this is where it starts to get really interesting because I'm improving people's lives by virtue of how we can use technology, and it's in everyone's better off for it. So I do think we're anxiously waiting to see this start to really catch on, because I think automation not only will give you efficiencies, but it's going to change people's lives for the better. And you'll have a lot. And again, all of that, especially when you're talking about this kind of automated transactions, every bit of those transactions events will then also be real time recorded in a ledger to ensure that it happened. And you can literally see payment going from one digital wallet to another digital wallet with finality, right? So this is kind of the exciting world we're coming to. And I think that as people start to see that it works, obviously there's so much talk now around a digital currency, stable currency, stable coins, asset-backed digital currencies. This is starting to come online, and once that's I think here in the US even PayPal has their own digital stable coin. So it's going to become more mainstream. Why not tie validated activities to it? And once that's done, you get paid. So I think that's going to be a real game changer, and we're excited about when that finally starts to really catch on.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, I always learn something new when I chat with you, and we've only known each other for 2 2.5 weeks, but hopefully our listeners will leave this podcast and think of the art of the possible and really shift their thinking on what's doable, since you've described what you're currently doing and folks are using this technology today. So thanks very much for joining. I know a lot of people are probably going to want to follow up. So what's the best way that people can get a hold of you, Henry?
Yeah, so Henry, last name's Ines, Ines. Easily can find me on LinkedIn, but also email hines@chainparency.com. And of course, you can go to our website, chainparency.com, and it's very easy to connect with our team there. But yeah, there's lots of easy ways to be able to reach me, and would be very happy to ideate and have any conversation about how this technology could be of benefit to the people listening in.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks so much for joining. It was really important for me. I wanted to squeeze this one in as the last podcast for 2025 because I thought the topic was super cool, and it was the first I've actually heard of someone actually doing this at scale, to be honest with you. So thanks so much for joining on a quick request there, and looking forward to seeing you some point in the future somewhere on the circuit of events.
Yeah, thank you so much, Kevin, for having me. It was, like I said, it's just met, but I already see lots of great things happening and lots of synergies here, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to be on the podcast.
Awesome, good stuff. Well, we'll keep in touch and we'll chat soon, and happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays to you too.